Sports and Recreation reporting on SDPB is supported by Regional Health, helping patients and communities live well.
It's estimated that recreation along Lake Oahe generates upwards of $20 million annually. The resources in the reservoir, along with those in Lake Sharp, Francis Case, and Lewis and Clark, further downstream, are managed by South Dakota Game Fish and Parks. Staff members from the agency were guests on a recent South Dakota Focus to discuss the Lake Oahe management plan and the issues that linger from the Missouri River flood in 2011. Larry Rohrer brings you this summary.
From a recreational point of view, the Missouri River flood of 2011 was unprecedented. But each reservoir in South Dakota was impacted differently. Mark Finsel, a fisheries biologist for Game Fish and Parks, says of the four lakes, the impact on Lake Oahe was unique because of the design of the dam.
So Lake Oahe has the powerhouse, which draws its water from essentially the middle of the lake. Then it has the stilling basin, which takes most of its water essentially from the bottom of the lake or just above the bottom. It pulls the water, that cold water, from the lake. Now, most of the other reservoirs have a overflow release structure, which release most of the water from the top levels of the water, so it's warm water. So because of that, they're actually taking different species of fish that either prefer warm water or cold water and moving them through the lake. Because while he has those deep water releases, most of the fish we lost were cold water species.
The deeper, colder flood water literally flushed most of the rainbow smelt, the walleye's favorite food, right out of the lower part of the lake. Hillary Meyer, another fisheries biologist, says as that cold water moved downstream, it also suppressed the bait fish spawn in Lake Sharp and Lake Francis Case.
Our main prey bases there are gizzard shad, and those are more of a warm water species, and they spawn when the water warms up to 60 degrees or so. So because all that water was so cold, we had a really, really late spawn of gizzard shad. So basically those fish in Lake Sharp and Lake Francis Case, mainly smallmouth bass and walleye, they really didn't have much for food then. So we actually saw a lot of really skinny smallmouth bass specifically and some walleye as well. So it impacted the food resources in all the reservoirs.
And the impact of the 2011 flood didn't end with the fisheries.
All of that water, that's a huge amount of force going through the river. Mm-hmm. So we had a lot of sediment, a lot of sand and mud that was dredged up from the bottom of the river. And because of that, it really changed the way the river really is today. So we have a lot more new sandbars, the channels shifted a little bit, maybe some of the old fishing holes that were there have filled in. So we've seen a lot of changes after that flood, and we're still kind of figuring out a lot of those changes and seeing how they've affected our fisheries.
When it comes to recreational boating around the new channels and sandbars, there really isn't much Game Fish and Parks can do aside from cleaning up or building new lake access. When the fisheries habitat is upended, there are options. They range from stocking fish or bait fish and social management, like daily limits on the size and number of fish that can be taken. But before they act, Gino Adams, fisheries program administrator, says they're still learning how the flood changed the walleye population on the lake.
It impacted the walleye population much differently depending on where they were at in the reservoir and also the size of the walleye. So a young walleye will feed on something much different than a 20-plus inch walleye. So those younger walleye, when something like this happens, they are much more adapted to switch over to bugs or invertebrates or some other sort of forage that can keep them growing. Their growth might slow still, but they'll still continue to grow. Whereas when you get those larger fish, they turn over to a diet that's completely dependent on larger prey fish. So when we flush those fish out of Lake Oahe, those larger size walleyes, they just didn't have the food there to sustain them. Those are walleyes that just couldn't find food. The vast majority died in the lower end of the lake.
And that cycle of losing a majority of the year's remaining larger walleye population reoccurred 4 years in a row right after the flood. This is where the Lake Oahe Management Plan comes in to guide GF&P activities on Oahe through 2021. Activities that look beyond restocking walleyes, because Adam says that's not the complete remedy that some people think it is.
It does work really well for creating new fisheries after a winter kill in the eastern part of the state, but we've spent a lot of time and effort in the past looking at where fry stockings work, where fingerling stockings work, and I say fry, those are the small walleyes that are just hatched versus the fingerlings that are a little bit longer. And we've done a lot of research into that, and there's been a lot of research done around the Midwest on what works and what doesn't. When you look at a lake like Lake Oahe, the vast size of it, it's very tough to outdo Mother Nature. We can stock walleyes, and we have stocked walleyes in the past in Lake Oahe, but Mother Nature can just dwarf what we can do as far as stocking is concerned.
And the same goes for stocking bait fish. Oahe is just so big that Game Fish and Parks hatcheries don't have the capacity to raise enough stock to make much of an impact, even if they focused solely on Oahe at the expense of all the other lakes in the state. But Mother Nature is getting her work done. Oahe fisheries are on the comeback. Research this past year shows the beginning of a turnaround for the walleye, even though Finsel and Myers say numbers and conditions vary from one end of the big lake to the other.
Upper Lake Oahe is doing much better than Lower Lake Oahe. Lower Lake Oahe felt the effects of the flood more so than Upper Lake Oahe, and there's just more fish in the upper end of the lake right now.
So when we talk about condition as biologists, we're talking about how fat or how plump a fish is. Mm-hmm. And right after the flood, we saw that condition really go downhill. But the last few years, we've seen an uptick in the condition of especially the larger fish. We've had, you know, rainbow smelt have kind of bounced back recently. So our fish are really starting to look good.
Not all fish species are struggling, though. Smallmouth bass are booming on Oahe, and research shows the smallmouth does not compete with a walleye, so their numbers don't impede the walleye recovery. Game Fish and Parks has always managed salmon on the lake, from their introduction to annual stocking. But since the flood, Mark Finsel and Hillary Meyer say their practice of taking brood stock from the river does have an impact on fishing.
So all of the salmon that are in Lake Oahe come through one of our state hatcheries. We collect the adults, you know, we fertilize the eggs, put them in the hatchery. And then after the flood, we just didn't have a lot of adults. So we're not having enough fish return to the station on its own to meet our egg demands. And so to supplement that, we are going out and shocking, you know, different bays, different creeks and stuff like that to get enough females and enough males to try to keep that salmon program ongoing to get enough eggs and milk to, you know, make salmon for the next year.
Our salmon program is not necessarily based on the amount of food that's out there for them. As Mark mentioned, we lost a lot of our salmon, so the reason why we were stocking fewer of them is just because we simply couldn't capture that many salmon and we couldn't collect very many eggs. So really that's our limiting factor more so than food, is how many adult salmon we can collect every year.
But they are optimistic as the post-flood issues on the lake continue to linger. The Lake Oahe Management Plan is reviewed annually, updated through research, angler use and harvest surveys, and an estimate of fishing pressure. Meyer and Finsel say the key issues remain shoreline access, fishery habitat and population boom and bust cycles, battling invasive species, and simply gaining more biological knowledge.
It's kind of like a doctor checking your heartbeat. You know, we're checking the pulse of Lake Oahe, essentially, so we can have a good idea of what's going on out there and maybe try some of these experimental procedures, experimental stockings or research projects to try and help us understand the system and how it works better.
The one thing I would want to add is that, you know, we shouldn't become complacent. You know, the flood just happened in 2011. It's in the rear view. You know, the flood will happen again. You know, over a long enough time span, we'll have another high water event. We should be continually trying to work with the Corps, come up with permanent solutions so that this doesn't happen again. Yeah, that would be my take-home message.
South Dakota Game Fish and Parks just wrapped up a series of public meetings in communities along Lake Oahe to share and to gain knowledge of their work, with hopes that visitors to the lake will enjoy their experience even more and continue to add millions of dollars of direct economic impact generated by the reservoirs along the length of the Missouri. For In the Moment, I'm Larry Rohr.